We want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church podcast with Pastor Terry Bailey. This podcast can be found on iTunes by searching for Terry Bailey Ministries. Right now, let's get to Pastor Terry's insightful message.
I have said this often enough before, and most of you here will probably share my testimony in this regard. I grew up in a household as an individual under authority. My father reckoned that he had authority in our household, and he reckoned that it was his responsibility to exercise that authority for the good of his household. Now, as soon as we kids were old enough to understand, he quickly made it known that there was a provision by which that situation could change. That any of us kids who wished to be out from under Dad's authority could have that thing instantly the moment we were ready to move out and take care of ourselves. And going to college didn't count unless you could pay for it all on your own. Until that time came that you were ready to assume complete responsibility for all your own actions, we were under his authority. And I will testify today that I am better for having been under authority. Now that said, let me interrupt the flow just long enough to ask all of our veterans or active duty military, if any are present, to stand for just a moment. Veterans, to your feet. Dorothy, I recognize you. I know that getting up is a problem, and you can stay seated, and I still recognize you. These are people who placed themselves under authority for our good, and we should always honor them. Thank you, fellas. Today's text is a text that soldiers probably readily understand, and there's a little bit of housekeeping that I need to do before I'm ready to make the points that I actually want to make out of this text. One is to understand Capernaum. And to do that, I need to remember something you probably already know about the ministry of Jesus. It falls into two distinct geographic locations. He had a northern ministry up there in Galilee, and he had a southern ministry down there in Jerusalem. And probably, I mean, Jerusalem, there are some pretty impressive things there even before you get to the crucifixion and resurrection. The raising of Lazarus from the dead comes to mind. But probably most of what you remember of the works of Jesus would be more closely associated with his northern ministry. All that business about boats and sea and miraculous catches of fish, that's up north. Most of the casting out of demons, that's up north. Not all, but probably the majority of the instances you remember about giving sight to the blind and strength to crippled legs and casting leprosy from people's bodies. Most of that, the letting the guy down through the torn up roof, all in the northern location of Jesus' ministry. And the primary city in which he worked was Capernaum. He always came back to Capernaum. And so many of these stories took place in or very near to Capernaum until the Gospels tell us that even though he was born in Nazareth, Capernaum became known as his city. That is, Jesus' city, his base of operation. So much of his profound teaching took place in Capernaum. so much of his powerful actions took place in Capernaum. And if there was one place where Jesus was known better and more fully than anywhere else, it was in the city of Capernaum. Now file that away for a little bit, and let me tell you a little bit about the organization of the Roman military of the time. Like every army, the vast majority of the soldiers were, as you would say, enlisted men. And there was a hierarchy there. Spearmen were lower than archers, and archers were lower than equestrians, and there were some other designations. But you get the point. This kind of soldier got paid less and had less authority. This kind of soldier, a little more pay, a little more prestige. This kind of soldier, additional authority as you worked your way up. But the heart of the army was the centurions. And there were lots of gradations between centurions, because a centurion over 80 to 100 equestrian soldiers was better paid and had more authority usually than a centurion over 80 to 100 spearmen as you worked your way up the line of centurions. But nevertheless, they were better paid than the general run of enlisted men. Each one of them had direct authority over 80 to 100 of those enlisted men, and they were usually obeyed implicitly. But there was a second level. These that I have described were what were known as third centurions. There was a level called second centurions. Because you took 5 centuries, that is, these units of 80 to 100 men, each commanded by a centurion, 5 of them would be put together into what was called a cohort. And there was a second centurion who was in charge of the cohort, and whose job it was to give orders to the 5 centurions, third centurions, that were under his command as they dealt with the men. And if you were a second centurion, you were getting at least what we would call that upper middle class level of pay, and a great deal more authority was yours. But there was also what was called a prime centurion. A legion consisted of enough cohorts to make 5,000 soldiers. So a prime centurion was giving orders to, say, 10, 12 second centurions, who were giving orders to 50 or so regular third centurions. And the prime centurion answered only to provisional governors like tribunes and legates. He was essentially in command of a legion. And he became a wealthy, powerful, influential man. And it was almost as high, prime centurion, as anybody who started as an enlisted man could ever be expected to rise, and very few of them ever made it. But there was one step higher, one last station to which an enlisted man might rise. A prime centurion, approaching retirement age, under a special set of circumstances, might be given what we would call a diplomatic or ambassadorial post. If there was a place that was big enough and important enough to require some direct Roman representation, but there was no active battles going on and no real Roman troops stationed there. You just wanted somebody to keep the peace, but it wasn't a big enough place to require a provincial governor, somebody like Pontius Pilate. A prime centurion approaching retirement age might finish his years in such a place. Capernaum was such a place. There were no Roman troops garrisoned in Capernaum. Herod Antipas had his own army, which he was allowed to command and exercise as long as no trouble arose for Rome. And to make sure that no trouble arose, this guy, this centurion, this prime centurion approaching retirement age was posted in Capernaum. He answered directly to a Roman senator who answered to the emperor. And he was a wealthy, influential, highly regarded, highly placed individual, or he had not been there. Hold on to that as we move forward. Such a centurion, as I say, would be more diplomat than soldier at this point, though he could still soldier were it required. And you can begin to see something of his diplomacy, because he is a Gentile. And he knows that it is not the normal order of business for a Jew, a Jewish rabbi, or any Jew who regards the religion seriously, to come into the house of one such as he. But he wants this favor from Jesus. So he calls together the elders of Capernaum, because it will be these men who, if an exception is to be made to what is normal practice, will say that it is or is not okay to make such an exception. And these men go on his behalf to Jesus and say, this guy has excellent character. He understands, respects, and loves our people and respects our ways. And furthermore, he funded our synagogue. He is worthy for you to do him this favor. Now, on the one hand, I don't think that the Jewish elders understood exactly who they were talking to Jesus, because I don't think Jesus was overly concerned about the man being a Gentile to begin with. But the man knew the Jewish reluctance to come to his house, and he sends the elders to make this diplomatic arrangement, and they say to Jesus, we not only think this will be okay, we think you should do it because he is worthy. Now, one quick note here, archaeologists have uncovered the synagogue at Capernaum, quite the place. Far beyond the means of a village that size, limestone, marble, columns, courtyards, everything, a big entry to a prayer hall with another elevated entry to the place of worship itself, quite the place. Somebody laid out a lot of money to build that synagogue, and in fact, we know who it was. This centurion. So Jesus starts to go. And maybe you could call this a second act of diplomacy. I think there is more to it than that. But the centurion sends word, you don't even need to come into my house And there are two things here. One is, I'm not worthy. Not worthy that you should come into my... And I need you to understand, this man answered directly to a Roman senator one step away from the emperor, as high as an enlisted man could go, had great authority, had lots of money, and he says to Jesus, I am not worthy that you should come into my house. Now, I also told you all the things that happened in and around Capernaum. Remember, this is the guy who was put there to keep the peace in Capernaum. And you may remember that there were occasional riots and a couple of attempts on Jesus' life. And the odds of such things having escaped this man's notice in the town where he is responsible seem to me pretty slim. So he has seen Jesus. He has heard Jesus. He knows what kinds of things Jesus can do. And he has been impressed. And this man, who in the worldly way of thinking might have thought he had much to commend himself, says to Jesus Christ, I am not worthy that you should come into my house. That's the first thing. Second thing, also, I am a man under authority. I came up from the enlisted ranks and I have learned all about how authority works, and I am a man under authority and I have people under my authority, and when I say to this guy, do this, he had better do it. And when I say to this guy, do that, he had ought to do it. But he has seen Jesus Christ. And he recognizes a greater authority. Well, I suppose so. If a man can say to a leper, be cleansed, and it happens. If a man can say to a cripple, get up, and he does. If a man can say to a demon, get out, and he goes. Well, that's more authority than I have. I can't do any one of those things, this centurion would reason, and he has done them all and more. I am a man who knows all about authority. And I can tell you this, this Jesus has authority. How much authority is given unto Jesus Christ? All authority. And if he will just say the word, my servant will be healed. Jesus made a big note about this man's faith, and then he proved him right. Said the word. And when those who had been sent got back to the house, the servant who had been on death's door was in good health. Now today I'm going to do a little true confessions time. I don't do this stuff too often, but I'm going to confess something to you. And it is that last week I was pretty discouraged. Few people know that I was discouraged. The pandemic, of course, drags on. I expected this. I'm the guy who said in the beginning, we don't know how to get rid of the flu. We're not going to get rid of this either. This is here for the foreseeable future. And yet you sit down and do your monthly reports, because remember, I'm a guy who counts and calculates things. And it's just another month in which we didn't make the kind of progress that you would like to see us make, and it piles up after a while, and where are we getting to? What are we accomplishing? And there are days that that weighs heavily on me. Now, I'll tell you, I'm not discouraged today. And there are reasons for that. One is I had my monthly meeting with my brother Dave, and he and I prayed together. And that helped. But another reason was the study that I put into this passage for this message. Because I am a man under authority. And Jesus Christ has all authority. And these propositions mean things. We frequently talk about God and mountains in the same breath. Several different themes on that, but one is the whole moving mountains thing. And sometimes we find ourselves in the position where it's almost like, have you looked at this mountain? Are you kidding me? What am I supposed to do about this mountain? When perhaps what we ought to be doing is saying to the mountain, you see this guy behind me? He has authority. And if he says, be uprooted and cast into the sea, you're going. We lose track of that sometimes. And if the mountain be the pandemic or an apostate culture or the general society-wide limping of the church or economic woes or you name it, let me tell you something. If these kinds of mountains were ever too big for God, the church would have failed long since. And the truth is, the church has faced bigger mountains than we are facing. Worse periods of sickness, death, and devastation. Worse instances of cultural corruption. Worse overwhelming financial woes. And God moved mountains. He's faithful to do that. He has the authority to do that. And I am a man under authority. I meant it when I told the kids that operations can break down when we stop obeying our commands from above. And I am a man under authority. And when God points at a mountain, it doesn't matter if he sends me out with a bulldozer and a track hoe or a wheelbarrow and a shovel. My job is to attack the mountain. His job is to see to the success of the enterprise. And he has all authority. And I am a man under authority of the Lordship of Jesus Christ. That's what it means to say, Lord, to place myself under his authority. I don't make you any promises like I'll never be discouraged again. That would be a foolish promise. Things rise and fall for our moods. But God never changes. His mercies are new every morning, and his power never fails. His word goes forth from him, and it does not return void. I am a man under authority. the lordship of Jesus Christ. And I just ask this morning, are you a man or a woman under his authority? Because it makes all the difference. And if you are not, friend, isn't it about time? I mean, really, isn't it about time?
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our faithful listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church podcast. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.